Iran's president tries to salvage the nuclear deal. For Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani is meeting with European leaders to try and save the international nuclear deal with his country. Yesterday, he met with Swiss leaders. Today, he's meeting with Austria's chancellor in Vienna. He's trying to rally support for the Iran nuclear deal ahead of meetings Friday between all the signatories, except, of course, the U.S. BBC business correspondent Amir Paivar joins us. Good morning, Amir.
Good morning.
President Trump has asked Europe to stop importing Iranian oil. Do you think they will? And is this one of the key issues President Rouhani is going to be addressing?
This has definitely been one of the key issues President Rouhani mentioned throughout his trip. He very subtly did mention that if Iran cannot export its crude, then no other country in the region will, which was probably a veiled threat for closing the Strait of Hormuz, which is crucial for crude exports. As you may know, EU is one of the major buyers of Iranian crude. Almost one third of Iranian oil is exported to the EU. But problem is, most of those refiners in Spain, in Italy, or in Greece are private sector refineries, which would not necessarily listen to the EU politicians. They have a risk and benefit equation to look at. And as we know, they have already started cutting Iranian purchase of crude.
President Rouhani's visit comes at a time when he's been criticized for the state of his economy, his own economy. What are the economic challenges Iran faces, and are those related to the end of the nuclear deal?
Oh, definitely they are, and they are huge. The massive devaluation of Iranian currency is the biggest one. Inflation is coming back. The growth is slowing dramatically. And also protests with merchants in bazaar in Tehran, or truck drivers or shopkeepers. So the country is facing immense challenges when it comes to its economy. Part of those are structural, but many of them were triggered by the fact that the United States left the deal, and there is some prospect of massive sanctions hitting back Iranian economy.
BBC business correspondent Amir Paivar, thanks so much for speaking with us this morning.
My pleasure.
It's been one of the big economic puzzles and disappointments of the past several years. We've got steady job growth, low unemployment, and yet wage growth is stubbornly, annoyingly slow. The Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is out with its big annual look at employment trends today, and it spends a lot of ink trying to explain this phenomenon. There's the rise of low-paying jobs, slow productivity gains, and as Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson reports, there's a mismatch between the types of jobs being created and the skill level of people looking for those jobs.
There are a lot of factors at play here, but sticking with skills, the OECD estimates that a quarter of adults lack the basic math or reading skills to be able to even process information correctly, let alone get a high-paying job.
So one in four adults, that's very substantial.
Stefan Carcillo is an economist with the OECD.
And it's even one in three adults in the U.S.
Carcillo says these days there's less demand for manual labor, more demand for creativity, complex problem solving, interpersonal skills. And lower educated workers are less likely to get ongoing training, which Carcillo says only reinforces the headwinds they face. James Besson runs Boston University's Technology and Policy Research Initiative.
We're really moving to a society where skills have to be continually relearned, you know, lifelong learning, as people call it.
And especially desirable, says Besson, workers who can teach themselves new skills. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Slabaugh from Columbus, Indiana. Make Me Smart and Marketplace are two of my favorite shows, both pushing me to think outside of my normal boundaries and making issues important to me that I wouldn't have considered before. I became a Marketplace investor because I feel it's important to vote with your dollar for media that makes a difference in the world. To join me as a Marketplace investor, donate today in whatever amount works for you at marketplace.org.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Like many old cities, Savannah, Georgia stakes a lot on its history. In fact, the National Park Service calls Savannah's downtown one of the largest urban historic landmark districts in the country. It's a big draw for tourists and residents. But a new report finds the district is under threat. As Georgia Public Broadcasting's Emily Jones reports, it comes down to a familiar tension between building the future and preserving the past.
Probably the best way to experience Savannah is the way a lot of locals and tourists do, on foot.
Welcome to Savannah. I'm Bonnie.
Our tour guide, Bonnie Terrell, tells us that to understand Savannah, you have to understand James Edward Oglethorpe, who founded the Georgia colony and designed this city.
He planned the usage of all the space in the city. He was very meticulous, even down to the use of the lots and the width of the streets.
The streets run in a grid, broken up by small parks known locally as squares. Behind them are alleys known as lanes. But on our walking tour, we pass several blocks where buildings have obliterated a street or lane entirely.
Sadly, they've been built over in various places.
And that's a problem, because a substantial part of downtown Savannah is a National Historic Landmark District. And a recent National Park Service study says the district is under threat, largely from development. Hotels are some of the most visible new projects in that area. The study says more than a dozen are in some stage of planning or construction. There's a paradox here. Hotels come to town because the historic district attracts tourists, a record 14 million people last year. And developers like Richard Kessler use historic preservation tax credits to adapt old Savannah buildings, like the power plant he's turning into a hotel.
It motivates people like us to say, okay, let's take this on.
But critics say those same developers still make changes that chip away at Oglethorpe's plan, building a little higher or taking up more space on a lot. Daniel Carey is president of the Historic Savannah Foundation.
Cumulatively, if you start saying, well, now we're going to allow taller buildings and we're going to cut some corners on Oglethorpe's plan, those things do start to add up.
The new report recommends listing Savannah's landmark historic district as threatened, kind of like an endangered species. The National Park Service is still deciding whether to take any action. In Savannah, Georgia, I'm Emily Jones for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.